Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Zingari, and I just want you to know that we've edited this podcast for brevity, so you hear all the good stuff quicker. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. For people with a substance abuse problem, getting treatment in prison can be one path to sobriety. But there are limitations to who has access to things like medication-assisted treatment and for how long. Vermont Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine told Vermont Edition earlier this month that it's critical for those entering the Department of Corrections who are already on medication-assisted treatment to continue taking those medications.
We currently have programs within DOC where individuals who have been on buprenorphine can continue to get that immediately when they enter the facility, and we're trying to make sure that they can get it for as long as we think they might need it, specifically longer than 90 days.
Although there currently is a limit on how long people can get that treatment in prison, and for many people who are not in prison, MAT, as it's called, can be administered for much, much longer. Some people say tapering inmates off medication quickly is not good for their ongoing treatment or ability to stay away from opioids when they get out of prison. And people who work with inmates who are struggling with addiction say it's when they leave prison that they're at the highest risk of relapse. Today we're going to look at the treatment available for people who are addicted to opioids and are under Department of Corrections supervision. Annie Remnisiano is the Mental Health Systems Director for Vermont's Department of Corrections, and she's with us now. Annie, it's nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
And Heather Newcomb is the Work Readiness Program Manager with Vermont Works for Women. Every week she works with a group of women at the Chittenden Regional Correctional Facility, many of whom face challenges related to addiction. Heather, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
How much of a problem is opioid addiction in prison? Annie?
Well, we have begun screening inmates upon intake, probably intensively starting in January. So we've been collecting data since that point.
So just a couple of months.
Yes. And so, well, with a more specific tool that is a greater indicator of moderate to high opioid use disorders. And based on that data, we predict that about 25% of inmates may be coming in, based on that screening tool, as moderate high risk for opioid use disorders.
When you say moderate to high risk, is that basically, in layman's terms, people who are dealing with an active addiction?
I mean, they're most likely to have an opioid use disorder, and then a clinical assessment will make that final determination.
And are some of those people in treatment and dealing with an opioid addiction, or are those people who are basically not getting medical treatment or therapy for their addiction?
So some of those people are already coming in on medication-assisted treatment. And as you mentioned previously, we are intent on making sure that that medication, whether it is buprenorphine or methadone, is continued upon intake.
So how many people do you think are coming in with an active addiction who are not getting treatment for it?
Now you're going to make me do math. So we basically have about 6,500 unduplicated inmates every year. Some people do recycle, so that is a fairly tight number. The actual number is larger of intakes. But that being said, it would be about 25% of that population.
And Heather, you, as we mentioned, work with a group of women, and some of them are dealing with addiction. How many of them? I mean, how common is this problem as you see it?
It's very common in the women who access my class.
What do they tell you about dealing with an addiction in their lives and then trying to deal with it while also being in prison?
Well, for some of them, it was a really hard transition, depending on how they, you know, ended up getting arrested. There's some cases where their women are arrested in another state. So even if they had been involved with a medication-assisted treatment program here in Vermont, because the process of extradition takes time, that interrupts their treatment. If someone can't consistently access their treatment, that sometimes can impact whether they receive treatment once arrested or not. So
I want to make it very clear and just state it, although it should be obvious, that there's no point at which I or anyone on this program is saying that having a substance abuse disorder or being addicted to opioids is criminal. However, there's a high correlation between the prison population and addiction in general and opiate addiction. And in some cases, it's an addiction that actually fuels some criminal behavior and criminal activity. And Heather, do you find that in the women that you work with and talk to, that they find that addiction is sort of part of this whole reason why they find themselves incarcerated?
Oh, yeah. Many of them are in jail because of crimes related to their addiction. And I know for myself as an addict in recovery that I just wasn't aware of all the opportunities for treatment out there. You know, we didn't have methadone in the state when I got into recovery, so I had to leave the state in order to gain treatment. And then when methadone was started here, I wasn't considered a Vermonter anymore. So they're definitely, it definitely, you know, one plays off the other. So,
and Annie Remnisiano, for DOC, you know, do you see this as an issue that is part of your job in DOC in treating addiction and hopefully helping make sure that people are able to leave corrections and not return? And yeah, not, you know, relapse.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've been a passionate alcohol and drug counselor for most of my career here in the state of Vermont, and I'm honored to be able to apply this knowledge to the department's practices and policies. I think we equally share the concerns that Heather already mentioned in ensuring the well-being of inmates while they're in our custody and then also upon release. The literature definitely shows that having people on MAT not only improves their quality of life, reduces medical expenses in the community, and then also reduces the number of crime days that might result in a recidivism.
So my understanding of the way it works, though, is that for people who enter the prison system who are not already getting MAT, medication-assisted treatment, they cannot get it in prison. They can't say, I've come in with a full-blown addiction. I've come in actively using. I want treatment. And then – but if they cannot say that and then get MAT in the Vermont prison system currently, right?
That is currently correct. And we're seeking to remediate and improve on the situation with a bill that's just about to be voted out of the Senate called S-166.
So you actively support the idea that people should be able to say, I want treatment, and get it in prison and start getting it in prison.
Yes, the department is a very willing partner with other stakeholders, the Department of Health primarily, in ensuring that this policy is addressed.
Heather, I see you nodding. You support this policy idea as well.
I do. Only thing that could possibly be better is if someone didn't have to raise their hand and say, I'm an addict that needs treatment. I think sometimes someone who's arrested, that's an opportunity to perform an intervention. Because if that person's rock bottom is in jail, I don't want to see what it is.
So how would you, if not a person, him or herself saying, I need treatment, I need help, how would you think DOC could stage that intervention? You know, would it just be urine tests? I mean, what do you think would work that would respect the humanity of people and their, you know, whatever privacy they're able to still have, but would also help?
Well, I think, you know, the expanded intake process, the, you know, refined assessments that DOC uses, the fact that depending how one assessment comes out, that triggers other assessments that need to happen.
And we've been talking a little bit about this Senate bill, and on the line with us right now is Senator Tim Ash, Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash. Senator Ash, nice to have you calling in. Thanks for joining the program.
Nice to be here.
So this is something that you are passionate about as well. What's your stance?
Well, I think it is pretty well understood that inmates who do not receive treatment when they are released into the community are far more likely to suffer from an opiate overdose. I was reading during the summer and fall research out of Rhode Island and Massachusetts, which was pretty staggering. Rhode Island is the state that has pioneered medication-assisted treatment in prison, and they saw their opiate overdose deaths in a one-year period decline from 26 individuals to 9 individuals, so pretty serious positive results. And so I think in talking with providers and talking with former inmates, talking with other legislators, we believe that we need to provide people the treatment they need while they're incarcerated to improve their well-being and community safety when they are not incarcerated.
What about what Heather Newcomb said, that the idea that somebody has to raise his or her hand to say, I need treatment, can be problematic, not only because it requires somebody to take that step, but also my understanding is that sometimes people are afraid of what saying I have an addiction might actually do, whether it's child custody cases, whether it's something related to their own adjudication. So what about this idea of how to make sure that people can get treatment, but also not feel like they're adversely punished for it and therefore not requesting it?
Well, if there are unintended or undesirable consequences of someone entering treatment while they're incarcerated, I think we would certainly want to address those kinds of issues. For us, the primary policy question that the Senate is voting on this week out of committee is, should someone who needs treatment while they're in jail receive it? And we know that only a fraction of those who need it today are receiving it. And oftentimes, this administration and previous administrations will pose it as a question of whether we have the money in the budget. And what we in the Senate are saying is, the question is not just a matter of money, it's a matter of life and death for individuals. And that's not an exaggeration to say it.
In addition to the question of who should be allowed to have access to medication-assisted treatment is the question of how long that treatment should continue for. Do you believe it should continue unabated for as long as a patient needs it, or is there a cap that should be administered?
Well, I think that the ideal situation would be that someone should be receiving treatment for as long as it's clinically appropriate as determined by a medical professional. And so there is no therapeutic or medical basis for having some fixed cutoff point. And I think the key is, as every taxpayer and every citizen in the state has to say, would you rather have a cutoff date or some arbitrary measure if you knew that would make it more likely that people would get out of a facility and likely overdose? Obviously, people who exit a prison or other correctional facility, often, if they have a relapse and use, they're often using at a potency and a level that they may have been able to sustain prior to being incarcerated, but makes them more prone to an overdose when they get out because they don't have the same tolerance. So we would prefer what is clinically appropriate rather than some arbitrary deadline or cutoff date.
That is Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash. Senator Ash, thank you very much for being on the program today. I really appreciate your call.
Thank you. Thank you for this really important discussion.
Annie Ramnissiano, one of the questions that has been raised is how long people can get this medication-assisted treatment for. And Alicia Fries at 7 Days has been doing some stellar reporting on this since late last fall. And there's now been an expansion of how long people can get MAT. But what's the rationale behind tapering people off it at all when in the general population, people are often on these medications for years or if not forever?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. The limit of 120 days is actually based on research and also based on our current status as an interim opioid treatment provider. The 120 days is based on research that shows that medication alone during that time period is just as effective as medication with treatment and also coincides with the type of certification and accreditation that the DOC currently has.
In other words, DOC needs to be recertified as a long-term treatment facility in order to be able to extend MAT past 120 days.
For methadone specifically, yes.
Not for buprenorphine.
Not necessarily for buprenorphine.
And are you – so what's your position on that? Should people be able to be in MAT for years and including a transition as they leave corrections?
I think there are many factors that the DOC needs to take into consideration. We certainly have looked for information from Rhode Island and other innovative states, but there's very little research in the literature about what is best practice in this area. So I go back to the patient and the doctor relationship, and each case is so different. We need to rely on the medical opinions of our providers. We need to assess what's in the best interest of the inmate, and we need to look at the overall policy environment and the security needs of each of our facilities.
DOC, I understand, has been asking for a review then for a year before implementing a plan where people could be on something like methadone for as long as necessary, not a cap?
Actually, the current legislation in 166 says that we enjoin participations with the health department will be submitting a plan to operationalize methadone by October 1st
of 2018.
So we've moved up the timeline.
Heather, what do you think about that question of how long people should be on MAT?
When it comes to many factors of treatment, medication alone is not effective. And DOC, and it's not just DOC, but an inmate's ability to receive those other aspects of treatment is critical. I know that DOC has a history of working with other agencies to bring in more supports for inmates. And I think there are some great programs with their partnership with the organization I work for, or Phoenix House. And I'd like to see some other programs that expand recovery programs in more effective ways, you know, such as expanding workforce development programs.
Yeah, which is what you work on.
Yes.
So when the women that you work with and talk with, do they feel adequately supported in their addiction treatment, in getting that kind of therapy and getting not just medication, but in getting the skills that they'll need then when they leave prison to be able to not relapse?
I would say they're not feeling that way. And when you consider, you know, the geographic area that Vermont is and the way the facilities are structured, so all the women right now are housed at one facility in South Burlington. And it's really hard to tailor some treatment when you know a woman is being released to a very rural area and they may not be able to access those same resources to continue their treatment.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're talking about how opioid addiction treatment works in Vermont's prisons and where it needs some adjustment. We're talking today with Annie Ramnisiano, the Mental Health Systems Director for Vermont's Department of Corrections, and Heather Newcomb, Work Readiness Program Manager with Vermont Works for Women in Winooski. Every week she works with a group of women at the Chittenden Regional Correctional Facility. And let's go to Nick, who's calling in from Westminster. Hi, Nick. Go right ahead.
Hi. So I was just recently incarcerated for a month in southern Vermont at the Southern State Correctional Facility. And I've been on medically assisted treatment for 6 years now. And I got to say, once I was inside, the lack of available options for those in recovery that get locked up, it was nil. There was nothing. There was the occasional AA meeting, occasional NA meeting, but other than that, there's almost no anything going on in those jails. You just get locked in a box and that's it. You get your, they give you Suboxone one time a day, which is normal. And there's very little as far as, outside of the medicine, you know, the necessary part of recovery.
Nick, yeah, thanks for sharing your experience. What do you think would be better? What would you like to see?
At least some kind of more active, groups, people talking about this stuff. That's the thing that keeps people sober. It's not, Suboxone is great. You know, it keeps away the heebie-jeebies, but it doesn't heal you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Nick, I really appreciate you sharing that. And I want to turn your critique to Annie Ramnisiano, because this is one of the questions. It's not just, it sounds like Nick was able to stay on Suboxone. So some of the questions sometimes are, how long is that intake process, and how, can somebody stay on that treatment as they enter the system and move through it? Sounds like that wasn't so much a problem for Nick, but this question of, how do I make sure that I'm doing the other things beyond bupe that actually keep me off opioids.
Absolutely. And Nick, thank you so much for your heartfelt call. We take your concerns very, very seriously, and we certainly know that the best practice is to offer people much more and have much more available and many more ways available to them. I think to that end, we've started a new program of peer support, forensic peer support across the system, and we have trained inmates to be coaches to help people with their lived experience of incarceration, their lived experience of mental health problems, and their lived experience of substance use disorders. We're also talking very actively on implementing different groups, as you already mentioned, to help support people in their recovery lifestyle, to help with their thinking, to help with socialization, and any other issues that they need to address. Likewise, we have a pilot program going on in the northern part of the state, implementing the same type of peer support at reentry. And we have started to do a group model again, facilitated by somebody who is skilled in recovery coaching and also partners with somebody who has lived experience of incarceration to help bridge reentry into the community.
Are there differences in the services that someone can avail themselves of, whether they're in the population that's still awaiting adjudication versus somebody who has actually been sentenced and is in the prison population?
No, Jane, there isn't. The definition, legal definition of inmate includes those who are sentenced and those who are detained, so there's no discrimination against access of services. Everybody receives the same health care screening and the same access to health care services immediately after booking.
I want to bring another voice in here, Tom Dalton, a licensed alcohol and drug counselor with Vermonters for Criminal Justice Reform. He also worked for several years at the Howard Center's Safe Recovery Program. It's a recovery center for people living with opioid addiction, and it's in Burlington. Tom, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you think would move this situation forward, would help address opioid addiction in the prison setting?
Well, I think the most important thing we could do right now is pass S-166. It's the bill that Senator Ash called and spoke about. It was introduced by Senators Sears, Ash, and Ayer. And that's the bill that's saying that would remove the 120-day time limit on medication-assisted treatment for people who are already participating in MAT in the community prior to incarceration, and creates the timeline to get MAT induction in place.
MAT induction meaning somebody could start MAT in prison.
Right. They would be able to start. So getting a timeline with solid deadlines, I think, is really important for us to do right now, because this is something that we've been making progress on, and I really appreciate Annie and the other folks at Corrections for the progress that we've made. But the process has been going on for 5 years now, and I think it's time for us to have some pretty strict deadlines in place, because it's a really important issue.
So, you know, that is moving through the legislative pipeline right now. But one of the other questions then is for making sure that people who leave the prison system, kind of regardless of what treatment they've gotten, are able to access treatment when they get out and smoothly and get connected quickly, so that there isn't that break. Or for someone who has not used opioids for a long time and then they're at risk of using and having an overdose. Tom Dalton, how do you think we could bridge that gap and make sure that that treatment can continue, or that people can get access to treatment so that they're at less risk of relapse?
So this is an issue that I've been working on with Annie and also Tony Fallon from Vermont Department of Health, and I really appreciate their partnership on this. I think that the biggest thing, again, is to pass S-166, because to the extent that we can get people inducted or started on MAT before they leave the facility, it really prevents a lot of that gap from happening, because the Department of Corrections is doing a pretty good job about making sure that people who are already on medication-assisted treatment have a smooth transition back to their community provider. It's really more where the person hasn't started MAT yet that the bigger gaps happen, and sometimes people fall through the cracks completely. So I think that making sure that we get as many people, give them the opportunity to begin treatment before they leave the facility, that's the most important thing to do right now. We also should be coordinating between jail caseworkers and probation officers to make sure that when somebody gets out suddenly, as sometimes happens, that you know, either the person in the facility or outside the facility is making sure that things are being followed up on promptly. Because when people get out without treatment, they often relapse immediately, and then sometimes it's difficult for them to get those pieces in place, and they need some support around that.
Are you confident that S-166 will pass?
After working on this for 5 years, I'm very excited about the momentum that this has right now. There's a lot of support in the community. I know that the mayor of Burlington, Mayor Weinberger, and Police Chief Del Pozo, and State's Attorney Sarah George are all vocal supporters behind this. There's a lot of momentum in the State House, so I'm really hopeful.
That's Tom Dalton with Vermonters for Criminal Justice Reform. Tom, thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you.
So, you know, I'm curious, Heather Newcomb, from your perspective, what you think would be effective. I mean, S-166 is this legislation that would remove the cap for how long somebody could get medication-assisted treatment in prison, and would also allow people to say, I need help, I have an addiction, and get that treatment started in prison. What about the other side, leaving prison? What do you think would be most effective? Where do you see areas that we could really beef up what we're doing?
Well, I hate to go back to workforce development, but I'm going to, because, I mean, employment is a top predictor of recidivism. So if we can, you know, get them stable on medication with treatment and then start teaching them skills and support their transition back to their community with employment supports, I think that will go a long way to not only their own sobriety, but whether they recidivate or not.
I know this is awkward because you're sitting next to someone from DOC, but is DOC on board with that idea of workforce development, and are they doing enough?
I think they are on board. We actually, Vermont Corrections Industries is DOC's answer to that. I think.
But I know some of those programs in the past have been either cut back or changed, you know, depending on where the women are incarcerated. There have been questions about can they still do some of the programs. And so there have been times, at least in the past, where it's unclear if that kind of workforce development was going to continue with the strength that it had been.
Well, I think, you know, because DOC is a state agency, they do try to do everything themselves, and VCI is looking outside the box. And this June, we'll be launching on a program with VCI and Vermont Works for Women so that we can start producing our peanut butter bar there. And, you know, one of the proposed labor gaps in the workforce is food manufacturing. So can we train these women to answer that and fill that gap?
Annie, what about for you? I mean, I know that in some ways, you know, when someone leaves prison, there are still often ties. There's still often, you know, they have to check in with a parole officer, for example. But you know, how do you make sure that you're sending people off in the best possible opportunities to stay out of prison and to stay on a path of recovery?
I mean, I agree with what Heather has said, and I also think housing is an enormous obstacle as well. Creating safety and security and stability for people reentering in the community is obviously the foundation for anybody's recovery and for anybody's sense of well-being. So I think housing continues to be a big challenge for us. And then I think for the DOC and for all of our partners, it's just a tireless but very satisfying struggle to continue to make sure that every inmate knows how to access health care, that their health care is activated when they leave the facility, and that they have their medication and they have knowledge and or appointments to all of the providers that they need to connect with as soon as possible.
How difficult is it, though, for you? You know, you can't control the housing stock in Vermont. So if that's one of the main barriers to success, I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, we work in very large interdepartmental teams trying to solve these dilemmas, which need to be broken down into smaller problems. So again, it's a daily task across the Agency of Human Services and with all of the community partners to address these issues. In every community, the problems and the severity of them are different.
Heather, I want to give you an opportunity to talk to people. We know that most people who are dealing with an addiction are not in treatment. And whether they're entering the correction system or not, what's your message to them about treatment and the possibilities of moving through an addiction into recovery?
Recovery doesn't just have to deal with substance abuse. When I think about, you know, my life in recovery, I've really applied the principles for sobriety into other areas of my life, to develop my career, to be financially stable. And then also my job is part of my recovery plan.
Well, I really appreciate both of you being on the program today and talking a little bit about opioid addiction in prison and how we're dealing with it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Jane.
Thank you so much, Jane.
That was Annie Remnisiano, the Mental Health Systems Director for Vermont's Department of Corrections, and Heather Newcomb, Work Readiness Program Manager with Vermont Works for Women.